Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, sporting a more casual look than normal, my good buddy and producer extraordinaire, Cameron McCoy. How are you doing, friend?
Great, man. I have nothing new to report. It's kind of been a nice, quiet, boring week.
Yeah, that's a good thing, right?
It is. Yeah, it's great sometimes to just literally do nothing one day. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm envious. We'll say that. I mean, my do-nothings are, like, usually just sit with my kids and watch, like, Elmo or whatever. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Burning through episodes of The Flash, which we'll talk about.
Okay.
And some other stuff. But, Cameron, we actually have a somewhat light news show this week. Mm. We're going to talk a lot about what we've been playing. But I'm interested, man. Let's start with you. You jumped into some Legacy. And the word on the street, and I don't know what it's like at your shop, but I keep my ear low to the ground. A lot of people are really liking the Legacy meta right now. Is that you?
I love this Legacy meta right now. It feels fresh, even though, like, you know, there's only like two cards that have been removed and very few that have been added to it. But yeah, man, this is a good Legacy scene right now, and I'm really happy. First and foremost, I just wanted to give you an update. I was complaining about getting a Badlands last week because they skyrocketed in prices. Mm-hmm. You know, some modern staples have really also skyrocketed in prices, right? Namely, engineered explosives, which I had three of. And so I only need one. Let's sell those, right? So I
absolutely
struck while the iron is hot. That thing is going to get reprinted, I would assume, here in the next year. But anyway, I had that. I had some store credit, and I was able to get a Badlands to put into my Grixis control deck for Legacy, which I was super excited about. Like, and so, you know, the past week has just been nothing but just like goldfishing and playing around with that. And then also playing online and really just kind of playtesting as much as I possibly can with this deck right now. I think that this Grixis control deck is the best deck that I've played while that is currently probably one of the best decks in Legacy. Normally when I'm playing like 12 Post or Esper Stoneblade or something like that, they're fine, but they're always like middling, right? I mean, Esper Stoneblade is not what it was in 2012. I was playing it in 2015, right? But this Grixis deck is nothing special. It's essentially just the check pile deck minus Abrupt Decays, Leovold, and your Green Splash, I guess. So and it's really good. It's very resilient. And things where I've always struggled with, even on games one, something like Storm. Like, I've always struggled game one with Storm. I was able to actually win game one against Storm, like, just out of nowhere, thanks to him to Turok, Thoughtseize, and just, like, shredding their hand and just winning on the back of, like, a, you know, Snapcaster and Baleful Strix. Like, it's kind of incredible, like, how you can really lock these games down. And the card quality is just so great that you can really, I think, you seem to be fairly balanced almost across the entire meta. Obviously, mm-hmm. I haven't played against a lot of things. And the thing I think I do struggle with the most with this deck is Eldrazi. They're just so much faster than what I'm able to do that turn two Thought Not Seer can just like totally devastate my hand as far as like getting rid of an edict or something like that, right? So like that was the one that I really struggled with. And I also Miracles is still I think the best deck in Legacy right now, but like that's such a stupid statement in some ways because I feel like there's so many really good decks right now. But yeah, Miracles just is really good, and they can just always win in the counter wars. And what I'm trying to do with my hand disruption and whatnot, they're just able to rebuild a little bit fairly quickly, right? So there's that. And what's the other thing? Oh, the new Liliana, which I've never really played with up until now, and she's great. Like, In fact,
time out. There's been like four Lilianas since Liliana of the Veil. So
Liliana of the zombie one, that -2/-1, three drop. Why can I not remember?
Is it a three mana? Liliana?
Yeah, 3-mana Liliana.
Liliana the Last Hope.
Last Hope. Sorry, man.
No, you're good.
Yeah. So I have one of those, and then I have of the Veil in the side as well. So anyway. Legacies is great. I really, really like this deck list. I'm very comfortable. I'm feeling really comfortable with it. And I'm actually really excited to play in a paper tournament with it. So, yeah.
So this is almost assuredly what you're playing in October?
Yeah, this is, I think, as close. I mean, I might refine it here and there, but this is the list.
Okay, so I'm going to talk to you about some choices. So to clarify the Liliana thing, there was a Liliana in Core 19, and there was one in Amaket. So anyway, So Hymn to Turok is prominently featured in this deck, right? And that gives you, I mean, you get not free wins, but there's an opportunity there to really shut certain other decks down. Now, at the Pro Tour, Eldrazi showed up a lot, and I think it was a response to a lot of people thinking that there would be a Grixis Delver deck.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, things like Reality Smasher, if they're able to resolve one of those against you, is kind of a real problem.
Yep.
But no, the Grixis deck, I think you can say, is the most comfortably 50% against everything. Now, I'm hazarding a guess, though, that against Miracles, again, Miracles can have those draws where they do stone nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what one of the issues with that deck. And it's not necessarily a hard deck to play in its current incarnation. It's just you have to be aware of the metagame because, you know, you're playing four Ponders, four Brainstorms, blah, blah, blah. You have to be able to sculpt the cards to give you the best opportunity to win. So when somebody that's really good with Miracles and they know the metagame, that's a huge advantage versus, like, if I were to just hand somebody, you know, a standard player Miracles and say, go play, I think they would have a real issue with it. Now, I do want to posit this little thing about Legacy that I've been thinking about. Like, if you look at the top decks, Grixis, Grixis Control, however you want me to term it, non-Delver Grixis, and Death and Taxes, and some incarnation of lands. Is it time for Spell Snare to make a return? Because these decks that we're talking about have a significant number of two drops more than whenever we had Deathrite Shaman in the meta. And Spell Snare used to be, and I know it's unthinkable now, but Spell Snare used to be a very common Legacy card, right?
Yeah.
Now, the Death Shadow deck, I think, obviously is, you know, it's all one drops, and you have no desire to ever play Spell Snare against that deck, so that might be the problem. But, you know, just in terms of me fashioning Miracles to play in October, like, do I put Spell Snare in my 75? Because being able to Spell Snare, snap Spell Snare against Death and Taxes is, like, real, you know?
Yeah,
like,
legit,
man,
for sure.
So, hey, Cameron, I've been playing this format called Standard quite a bit lately.
Yeah, how is it?
I think underrated. I don't think it's great, but I think it's pretty good now. Though, when I take the temperature at my shop, there is a lot of consternation, irritation about the Turbo Fog deck, which I think is pretty unwarranted. We had two Turbo Fog players in 15. One of them, I split for the finals, but the other person didn't even make the top four. You know, the deck can and does fizzle. I also think that, and I mentioned this last week, there's a big problem with people knowing when to pick up their cards because we were going to time a lot, and of course that irritates people. But like every time that I've seen us go to time, they're doing this whole, I need to let my opponent win. I am not going to concede. I'm not going to pick up my cards until the final blow is struck. And again, I understand that more at a competitive REL because you're giving your opponent the opportunity to make a mistake or whatever. But again, I literally saw a game in turns where the black-red aggro player had no permanents in play. Like the Turbo Fog player had emblemed. They were up a game to none. They were taking all the extra turns in turns, and we still all had to sit there. You know, and so that kind of stuff is just a little bit, I think, leads to the mythology of what this deck is. I just think it's okay. You know? It is weird. Have you seen them sideboard against other control decks?
No, I haven't been in the standard beta enough to see how that works.
I didn't know how that worked either, because I'm on Steely Stompy. My decision tree is, shall we say, a little bit smaller than theirs. But I watched it, and I saw the Turbo Fog player play a Carnage Tyrant.
Nice.
Okay. And I was like, did not see that one coming. But that's apparently their method. They just turn into the beatdown deck.
Yeah, why not?
And go after it that way. But, no, dude, Standard's fun. I mean, this Steely Stompy deck, I just play dudes and attack with dudes and try my hardest to play around Settle the Wreckage, which at an FNM level is more than enough.
Yeah.
So, the one thing I do want to mention about my game, so my one loss was to Mono White, and then I beat that player in the elimination rounds, which is, everybody loves that moment.
Oh, yeah, it feels great, right?
Yeah, it's the look at me, I'm the captain now kind of thing, you know? Anyway, but I hadn't had a chance to play with it a ton. Look, Vivian Reeds, I have a couple in my sideboard. This Mono White player was doing a transformational sideboard, and when we were playing in the Swiss, they told me, they side in 4 Settle the Wreckage, 4 Cleansing Nova, and 4 Fumigate against me. Okay?
Yeah.
So they bring in a full control package. And so knowing this, I brought in Vivian Reeds. And Cameron, I owe Vivian Reed an apology. Because in the grindy matchups, that card is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that you and I both missed, and by you and I mean likely me, but I'm going to blame it on both
of us.
Please,
yeah, yeah.
Is the destroy target flyer.
Yeah.
That is not a joke in this standard. That is an incredible upside. And something I, you know, just taking out Lyra Dawnbringer, just like 5 mana, hey, kill your Lyra.
Yeah, that's true.
Is a really big deal whenever you're playing mono green. So it does a lot of things that mono green doesn't necessarily normally do, and that's where the power level is. If she were a black planeswalker, it would be not nearly as good. So, I mean, not as wrong as I was on Elspeth Sun's Champion, but I think I was pretty wrong on Vivian Reed. She's a strong card.
Cool, man.
All right, Cameron, we're going to get out of this segment, come back, talk a little bit of MTG finance, and we're going to talk a little bit about counterfeit some more. That topic is flared up after last week. All right, Cameron, so some amateur finance. Our mystery box is creeping closer to that $300 mark, which is fantastic. Mm. We're at $291, a 31.12 increase since we started. I mean, this finance stuff. I mean, I should just be on Mad Money. I don't even know what we're talking about. Yeah,
just buy a couple mystery cards and like go sell, buy.
Buy, and then sell. I do want to mention this because, Cameron, you texted me in the middle of this week.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't end up doing it, but you were thinking about buying a booster box and trying to engage in some finance, but ended up holding off. Mm-hmm. So what brought this all on? Just kind of share this with me.
Yeah, so I had some like store credit. And I had like a freelance gig that I did, and I always treat like my freelance money as like just fun money,
fun
right?
Money.
So anyway, I had that, and I was like, you know, I should like just buy a box or something like that. I haven't done that in a while, and crack some packs. And so I was texting you, trying to think of like what would be the best return on investment with those, right? Obviously, with M19, if you can get the turns card or whatever that is.
Nexus of Fate.
That's a really good deal right now. The issue is that there's no Nexus of Fates left because everybody, like at my shop, everybody bought every single promo they possibly could, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that. And, you know, I keep on going back to like Dominaria. I really, really, really liked drafting and playing sealed in that. And I thought, you know, it'd be fun to just maybe like hold on to this box for 5 years. You know, randomly, I come over to your place, we get two other people, and we just, like, draft or something like that. I thought that would be kind of a fun thing to do, just to kind of relive the fun that I've had with Dominaria. But instead, I ended up buying the Badlands, because it's a better investment all around. Sadly, one card.
Right. One dual land is definitely a better investment than a Night of Misery with me while I yell at you about your triggers.
It's true.
Though I do like the idea of an old booster box being kind of like a wine, like you have a wine cellar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, 2018, it was a really good year for Magic, you know?
Yeah. You just bring it out and like show it like you're a server. Now, like, sealed product is an interesting conundrum because whenever I kind of put out there, so I ended up buying a couple boxes of Dominaria because I traded. So we have this local shop. I mean, it's not super local. They're all over the Midwest. This place called Vintage Stock. And I was cashing out of some old DVDs and things like that that my wife had tried to sell on our swap and shop and stuff and couldn't. So we're just like, fine, let's just take them to Vintage Stock. A bunch of them were duplicates, like we already had in Blu-ray, and you know.
Sure.
And I ended up buying, as a result of this, two boxes at like, quote, retail price, but they were not, they were just a trade-in, and it was the two lone things I needed at Vintage Stock or wanted. And that was an education in the variance of buying a booster box. So when you texted me, I was like looking up the expected values, and you get into this really crazy trap of like Dominaria, if you open the wrong mythics, you can pay, you know, whatever a booster box goes for at your local shop, anywhere from $90 to whatever, $130, and open $40.
Yeah.
Right? Now, again, those are right now prices. Something like Mox Amber is the kind of card that's worth nothing right now, but might be worth a significant amount of money more in half a decade. You know, that's, it's the poster child for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please don't take that as Mox Amber is the hot spec from Curtis or something. You know what I mean? But it's just that kind of unusual artifact ability, right? But I think you're always just served better buying singles. I've never run into a situation where you're not better served buying singles or, by extension, and I've done this a number of times, and I've done it with Core 2019, redeeming the set on Magic Online. You can do, like right now, you can redeem a set of Core 2019, get every one copy of every single card in the set for less than a booster box price.
Yeah.
And so, and you're guaranteed, right? And maybe I'm just, I just prefer to play things safe. But there's also this problem like with something like Core 2019 where the set of commons and uncommons isn't exactly lighting the world on fire, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Anyway, so I want to piggyback on last week, Cameron. So you and I had kind of talked about the counterfeit issue last week. A ton of articles and responses. And
all in response to us, I assume.
Well, yeah. We lit the match that sparked the rebellion. No, I got that whole line wrong. I think what I'm going to have to do is rewatch The Last Jedi this afternoon.
Clearly, yeah.
Just so I can, you know, kind of retain those the lines. But anyway, so TCG posted a video response that was real brief about their buyer protections. But this all started, so we had mentioned, we got the idea to talk about counterfeits from Saffron Olive's tweet where he was previewing his article. His article came out after we broadcast the show, and then it got to be a much bigger discussion. Our friend from Brainstorm Brewery days, Marcel, talked a lot about how he doesn't have sympathy for WotC because he feels like it's a printer issue. And then you have these people, like they mentioned in the Goldfish article, there's an entire subreddit about getting these counterfeits as real as possible. And so the varying degrees of the problem are really difficult to pin down, right?
Yes.
But I just, I'm going to start with you here, Cameron, because your shop allowed you to play with proxies. What did that look like? Did you have to have a printed proxy? Was it just Sharpie on cardboard?
Yeah.
And how much would you say that helped you get into older formats?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, without having that 10-card proxy thing, I would never have been able to get into Legacy right off the bat. The great thing about that is, like, you know, I was getting my Snapcaster Mages for like $20 and Brainstorm, you know, like all the cards that you need that are like the uncommon slot or whatever, lightning bolts or commons, they're so easy to get that you can invest $50 and essentially get the shell of a Legacy deck. And then you have to get the big ticket items, right? You need to get your Volcanics, you need to get Force of Wills, Wastelands, whatever was like really, really expensive at the time. And so it allowed me to slowly build into this and every single month add something additional to this Legacy deck to the point where then I could have a fully complete Legacy deck. And with the proxies, all we had to do was take a Sharpie, put it on the back of a Magic card, you know, like my M19, I just write whatever, slide it into a sleeve, and it's ready to go. There are some people who do print, like, a piece of paper and put it inside the sleeve on top of a Magic card and call it good as well. So, I mean, it really does vary, but there's no requirement as far as, like, what the proxy has to be or what it has to look like. But I've never seen people who have had, like, proxies that look like the legit real thing, right? Because that's a problem, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mentioned it before, and I just, as a whole, I don't like proxies. Here's what I have. I have a giant box of basic lands. Like, tons of them. And so when I'm building a deck, I get out a Sharpie, I flip the card over, and I write. And then as the cards come in through the mail or whatever, I just swap them out. Right, I have a real distaste for even ones that are clearly not the art, right? Quote playtest cards or whatever. I just think it's endemic of this whole attitude that I don't really care if it's good for the Magic community. I want it to be good for me. Yes, there are just people out there that are just going to sell copies of things and they don't really care, right? Because they're looking for a short-term profit. And that's a huge bummer. That's a huge bummer. What stuns me is the amount of people that believe they're making a statement or they think they're sending a message to WotC, or it's really strange kind of the jumps that you have to make logically to sustain that belief. Because first of all, they're not selling singles. Wizards of the Coast isn't. So you're actually hurting card shops.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people that are, A, on the ground doing it every day and make the community really work, right? And I don't think Wizards of the Coast is going to do anything about counterfeits besides make their counterfeit protection better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Look, I would love for them to respond to the counterfeit issue by saying, hey, we're going to get rid of the reserve list. But clearly that's not going to happen. You're not actually, the message you're trying to send is not enacting any change. And maybe you know that deep down in your heart, and you're just using that as your excuse to do this and kind of feel okay about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But like, just be honest. You're trying to fake something. You're trying to, you know, and I just have the same little patience for this as the people out there that download comics for free without paying the creators. I mean, we're talking about creators that are making not very much money for their comic books.
Yeah.
And then they justify it by saying, oh, well, it's a mega corporation, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, man. No, you're taking away, especially when they're creator-owned, like you're just taking it away from the people that are doing this for you.
Yeah.
So anyway, that all bugs me. And I don't know that it's necessarily a huge problem. In the TCG player thing, they said less than 1%, I can't remember the actual number, of cards are reported as counterfeit. But then you get into this thing of like, well, how many people know that they're holding a counterfeit?
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
And they said in the video, they also say that the supplemental products, like, I don't know, Cameron, have you ever held like a commander card or whatever? Some of the supplemental products, the card quality is like different.
Yeah, for sure. Whatever there is, yeah, they all feel a little bit different. They feel cheaper or something, right? Yeah.
And so those are the things that people assume are fakes. And again, Wizards could definitely up their quality control. But like, I hate this argument, and I see it on YouTube with YouTubers and all this. People say the feel is wrong. When you're talking about X amount of years of X amount of print shops, and they're not all printed at the same place, like, yes, there is going to be differences in feel. Use your freaking jeweler's loop. This is I'm just going to say this every episode.
Yeah.
Use magnification. Look at the rosettes. Apparently, these counterfeiters aren't taking the time, but the counterfeiters are taking the time, Cameron, to replicate the holographic seal.
That's crazy.
So, all in an effort to, quote, send a message to WotC.
Yeah.
So, anyway, counterfeiting, bad. Magic is good.
Yeah, it just stinks. It really does stink that this is this kind of what exists, right? And that the thing I'll just go back to is like just a game loss for an unknown fake. That's where I really start to have issues with this, like really, really, but yeah.
Oh, yes. So we do have more details because we were speculating. We didn't had no idea last week, but the guy borrowed a deck from a friend, played it, got deck checked, and he took a picture of the cards. And you know what happened on Twitter already, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to me, and granted, this is on my phone, they have the two pictures, and then people are saying, you can tell, man.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the fading on this or that. And it's like, dude, you know that you're looking for it. This is the problem.
Yeah.
Like, you have that bias heading into looking at the photos, but you can totally, like, if you showed up to a shop and said, hey, Curtis, I'm going to borrow Modern Storm today, I'd be like, hey, here you go. You're not going to go, let me check the rarity symbol.
Are you
going to
take that jeweler loop and look at all 75 of those cards, right?
So, like, my heart goes out to somebody like that because what can you do?
Mm-hmm.
What can you do? And like, things like font, things like the expansion symbol on a one-through pass, and especially a guy like me who I just care about what the card does.
Yeah, exactly,
Half the time, I can't even tell you what the art looks like, you know? Mm-hmm. So, it's a bummer. Anyway, Cameron, we've got a bunch of extra stuff to talk about. So let's get out of this segment, come back, and get your reaction to God of War. All right, Cameron. So you got some time off. You got to play some video games.
Yeah.
How'd it feel?
It was amazing. Picked up God of War on Monday and blasted through that game. And I haven't done that in a long time. Clearly, if you are following the show and you like these end segments, Curtis is talking about a new video game every single week, and I'm still playing Overwatch, it seems, right? but yeah, so picked up God of War, and first 2 hours, I was way on the fence about this game. It looked great. Sounded great. I mean, you know, I liked the setting and all of that. I really liked the kid character in the game.
So how close did you have to sit to your 12-inch monitor, Cameron, to see all this?
Yes. Very close. I'm like, you know, no. But like the thing that made me lukewarm on this game at first was going into this thinking it was the God of, like, a continuation of God of War 2, God of War 3, where I am Kratos and I am playing this like a Devil May Cry Bayonetta sort of game where it's super aggro and you're just doing a lot of like button combo mashing, right? Like that's the sort of thing that I'm expecting. And this game does not play like that at first, right? It plays very much like you said, Dark Souls, Neo, kind of like an expression of that where it's much more close combat, followed by long distance combat, and it was throwing me off so much, and I just felt like this is not the God of War game that I had wanted, right? Something clicked with me, though, after you kind of, I don't know, after like the second or third boss battle that I did, where it's like, okay, I really do understand like what they're trying to do with this combat, and I really started to dig it to the point where I still have like a real soft spot in my heart for like the original God of War combat and whatnot. This is really, really good. And as you said, like in like the end game, like after you pass the game and you get to go into like what almost feels like the real game in some ways, that's where like the expression of combat is like really good, like amazing good. So overall, but the game story, all of that, like I can't believe just how much more adult in the sense of like a heartfelt story this had compared to like Kratos killing dudes, you know? Mm-hmm. So very good.
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is no one's doing single player games better than Sony right now.
It's true. Yeah.
I mean, look, I love Breath of the Wild. I thought Mario Odyssey was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I might actually be the biggest Halo 5 apologist on the planet, but Sony, with this gen, I mean, Uncharted 4 is their worst single-player story that they've published this gen. I mean, God of War and Horizon were both mind-blowingly thoughtful for what they are.
Yeah.
Like, if you read the back of the box, which, by the way, there's a spoiler for God of War on the back of the box. Did you notice this?
No.
So the weapon that you get halfway through the game is shown on the back of the box.
Oh, I didn't even notice. I didn't even pay attention, I guess, but...
But that is the moment, because I was like you. I was like, man, I'm not clicking with this, but there's a narrative moment about halfway through where they connect it, and it becomes an actual sequel, which is really unclear to that point.
For sure.
And, I mean, it was, like, I popped. Like, I was just joyous in what they were trying to express and how they were trying to... It felt like a bunch of guys that were trying to comment on their original set of games and look back on them and I think kind of make amends in some ways.
Yeah.
But also honor what they had built before. It was a really interesting experience to have as a video game.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it's so funny with, like, as much as I love those God of Wars, if you were to go back and play God of War 1 and 2, they don't age kindly in 2018 as far as, like, Gamergate and representation of women and, like, things that are just, like, I think almost unacceptable to be doing as a major game publisher in 2018, right? And you're totally right that it feels like they are somehow honoring those games and, like, really saying we're going to celebrate the things that are really, really good about those original games, but we're going to take a more mature stance on, like, the storytelling and just where this game should be today and here now. And that was really interesting, and it elevated the game beyond what any of those other God of Wars have ever been able to do, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And there was this, there's this one particular moment, slight spoilers, where he's talking to a character from his past, and the character says, "You are a monster." And he says, "Yes, but I'm not your monster," right?
Yeah.
And then he goes to face this thing, this kind of insurmountable odds. And it's just like, it's such a great moment if you have been locked into this franchise for so long. Because I thought it was just a reboot. Honestly, I just thought, oh, they're kind of sweeping that stuff under the rug or whatever.
Yep.
And that's what really, the gameplay is great. The narrative moments, the never cutting thing, I kind of eye rolled. I thought, how silly is it that they never cut? Who cares? And it turns out it's really great and makes the game kind of hard to stop playing because it feels like there's never a natural break.
Here's the thing that this game did that I never in my life thought I would have done is watch a YouTube explainer video on Norse mythology.
Yeah.
Which is great, yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, yes, a lot of people have focused on a particular twist at the end, but I don't think that is what makes the game narrative strong.
Mm-hmm.
There's another really wonderful moment where, like, it's silence and he's riding in a boat that is, like, incredibly gripping. There's a moment where he shares, like, a drink with his son that is incredibly gripping. I mean, it's just at a professional, like, if you were to see that sequence looking and shot like that in a movie, you would not question it. Like, it's just that high quality.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if you know this, they've committed to the game is the game. There's no DLC that you have to pay for. They're not going to add any other stuff. The idea is that it's, quote, like Link to the Past. You buy it, you got it. Now, they did release patches, and now there's a New Game Plus patch, but it's not a, hey, pay for a chit or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah. Game of the year for you so far, Cameron? I think this is the lone game you've played, right?
Yeah, it is, right? No, it's definitely up there as far as, like a great game. I mean, we'll see. There's still plenty of time in 2018 for Game of the Year.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, you're throwing shit at me for playing a lot of video games. I will say a lot of my game experience is also pretty cursory, right?
Like, oh yeah, yeah.
I play Xbox Game Pass does enable this in me a lot. It's like I'll download this and play it for an hour and then never think about it ever again.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not giving you a hard time. I'm jealous in some ways. So,
yeah, yeah. I mean, you're trying to like be a freelance photographer or whatever that betters you. Like, come on, Cameron. Come on. Now, this week I played a touch of Madden, the previous years, which I think is 18, and 19 is the one that just came out.
Sure.
Someone else. It's a Madden, okay? Yeah. And okay, so I'm playing the long shot mode, which is the narrative. This is the reason I picked up Madden. I tend to, and I said this last week, I don't really care for football and basketball video games because I don't think they express the sport very well. And I was really intrigued by Madden as a story mode. I knew that they follow a character through the combine, which is kind of like the precursor to you getting drafted, for those of you who don't know anything about American football. And I grew up in a football home. My dad was a college football player. I played high school football very poorly, but I did play football. And as almost every Kansas Cityan is, I'm like a diehard Chiefs fan. I like the Chiefs a lot more than I like the NFL as a league, which is a whole other discussion. Mm-hmm. The NFL is a problematic league to follow is the nicest way to put it. But, and also I think the NFL takes itself like way too seriously. There's like no sense of humor.
Sure.
So sitting down to play Madden, of course, I'm forced to endure this like Tom Brady worship screen for like, I don't know how long. And the problem with the story mode is not what you would expect, Cameron. They've got actual real television level actors. The story is actually okay. I mean, it's corny, but it's age appropriate, and there's some really insightful things. There is not nearly enough football in it. It is a lot of dialogue. A lot of dialogue. And they do a terrible job. And this is also because I played a few exhibitions. They do a terrible job onboarding you. If you know nothing about football, you are hopeless in this game. The lack of tutorial is stunning. I know a lot about football, and I play a lot of video games, but they don't communicate to you the control scheme very well, really at all.
Mm-hmm.
The expectation is that you've played Madden for a long time, you know football, you know the rosters, you know everything. Give you an example. You're in this long shot mode, and never at any point do they explain to you the positions in a football field. Okay? They just say to you, okay, you're being interviewed by this coach or whatever. Okay, look at this screen. Which one's the safety out of the 11 players on the field?
Cameron fails.
Now, granted, the safety is one of the easier ones to point out.
Is it? Okay.
But I'm asking you, Cameron, not to put you on the spot, but how many football positions on the defensive side can you name?
None? I mean, I know the center and quarterback, and I think there's like a wing or something.
Yes.
A runner.
A wing is more of a place that you can be, not a position.
Okay.
But you know, hey, it's fine. Football's really complicated like this, right?
Sure.
And like the playbook and everything is just like, yo, dog, you could run this play or maybe another one. And they have little buttons that float over where these guys are. But, I mean, they're talking about play concepts versus play formations. I mean, this is things that a lot of high schools don't do play concepts. They just do formations and plays. So, like, it's really deep in a lot of positive ways. But it's also, like, kind of, if you're not in it, if you're not in the club, the whole game just says, yo, dude, buzz off. And it's kind of incredible at that level that they don't do more about that. The other thing I would say is I don't know that there's ever a better expression of, what's that called? The valley of like AI.
The uncanny valley.
Uncanny valley, yes. Yeah. When you're watching the game from a distance or you're seeing anything that doesn't have a player's face, the game is just jaw-dropping. Like, stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Almost imperceptible from televised football. Like, it looks great. And then they show the coach's face. And you're like, this looks like someone is wearing another human being's face.
Oh, no.
So
you're saying with sports games, I should probably stick to, like, Rocket League.
Sure.
Okay.
I would also recommend RBI Baseball. Mm. On the original Nintendo.
I like that one, yeah.
No, and I look, this is my own personal bias showing through, but I do think baseball expresses itself better as a video game than almost any other sport. Golf does a pretty good job, too, because it's just like golf meters or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But baseball, because everything's so mechanical, like you could actually have a robot officiate the entire experience, it really, and there's a very limited number of things that can happen. Mm-hmm. But with football, it's 11 people versus 11 people. So it just, it's hard to explain, but it doesn't feel right. So last thing I want to mention, Cameron, I want to mention a couple more things. Still reading Brian Michael Bendis's Superman.
Yeah.
He's got Superman in Action Comics, and I'm going through the ad, and he's publishing like three other books through DC. So the valve has opened.
Yeah, no kidding.
So far, I've liked his Superman series more than his Action Comics series. So just putting that out there. But I also finally finished Flash Season 1.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Cameron, I think these are things that you would never get into.
This is true, but I respect.
Yeah, the CW nature of it would bug you too much. I don't know how these guys, they call it the Arrowverse. So there's Arrow, Supergirl, Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow. I don't know why these guys, so, at least some of this creative team, aren't the people in charge of DC's film. Because clearly they get the characters. There's all these like production issues and acting issues with these shows. But man, there are these moments, and there's one specific episode of Flash, and I won't want to spoil it for anybody, but those of you who watched season one, there's an episode where he time travels for the first time. And like, we're getting into some deep DC lore stuff. Like, Earth 2 plays a prominent role in the Flash storyline. Like, we're going in there, buddy. And they just get the character, and there's this episode where he time travels for the first time. It's one of the single best TV episodes of a superhero show I've ever seen.
Nice.
Because they get rid of the villain of the week stuff, and they really dive deep into Flash lore, and man, I'm there for it. I'm so there for
it. That's cool.
And it's made me like, once I get the DC service, we're backlogging that Flash book, man. I'm going deep. So anyway, Cameron, if anyone would like to message you and convince you to watch all of CW's programming, where can they find you?
Twitter @Cameron_McCoy.
And I am at Curtis Now. Our official show feed is @SpikeBeatMTG. We will check you guys next week.